Welcome back to another episode of Black Friends Dinner. It's me, Nandi K, your resident Black non-binary bae, and we are coming to you live from LA. Hey, bitch got bars today, as you can see, rapper extraordinaire. We're still navigating what all Black Lives Matter means in a world where they don't over food and drink. We just finished a vegan pasta dish. I'll tell y'all a little bit more about that later, but first I want to introduce my guests. So first, I have Miss Kyler O'Neill. Let me read your bio. Born and raised the daughter of a minister in Cincinnati, Ohio, Kyler moved to NYC after earning a bachelor's of arts from Xavier, very learned. After a five-year residency in New York City, Kyler relocated to LA, where she's pursuing singing, writing, acting, dancing, modeling, all of it. We're so happy to have you. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And we have our resident producer behind the mic every other week. Now in front of the mic, the incomparable Sean Dawson, my boo. Hey, boo.
Hey.
So we just finished dinner. Kind of, as I said, it was a vegan pasta dish. Sean, do you want to tell everyone why we're having vegan food today?
Sure.
It doesn't sound like you do, so I'll tell the story.
All right.
A few weeks ago, maybe what, it was like a month ago, 3 weeks ago?
It's been about a month.
A month ago, Sean had the great idea for us to watch Eating Animals on Hulu. If you eat meat and you want to continue to, don't watch this documentary. After we watched it, we basically found out all these terrible things about meat, and we haven't been able to eat meat. Outside of the occasional fried chicken. And so everything is all vegan today. So I did a spinach artichoke pasta. So it was like vegan spinach artichoke dip with pasta. It was super good. But usually it's super soul food around here. And I always love to ask my guests what soul food is to them. Y'all know I'm from the South. I'm super Southern. I love mac and cheese and collard greens. I even used to eat chitlins. Judge your mammy. But it's different to everyone else. So, Angel, I can't keep up the names.
It's okay. Soul food to me would be macaroni and cheese, collard greens, sweet potato, sweet potato pie, chicken.
Who makes your favorite soul food meal? And what is your favorite soul food meal?
My mom makes my favorite soul food meal. I would say it's basically what we just said. Macaroni and cheese, collard greens, cornbread. My mom makes some bomb cornbread. Sweet potatoes. Like it's mashed, though. It's like, it's so good. And then my mom's pork chops are slamming.
I love pork chops.
Prior to me giving up pork, I loved me some pork chops.
Man, pork chops. Mm-hmm. I make great pork chops, too. Fried pork chops. Sean.
They're really good pork chops. I wasn't even eating pork chops until Nandi made some pork chops one night and I was on it. I was like, I do like pork chops.
Pork chops are so good. Too bad we won't ever enjoy them again.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not after watching that doc.
Never say never.
I said ever, not never.
Hey.
My favorite soul food, it's mac and cheese with candy yams.
Candy yams.
Like, yo, Sean makes the best mac and cheese and candy yams, actually.
Because I just love it so much, and I just watch my mom and my grandma make it.
You know what? I think that's what I meant. Candy yams, not sweet potato. I mean, sweet potato is
that
good,
is
too.
That is the same. Yams are sweet potatoes, we recently found out.
I feel
when
like
making
sweet potato, like, they are. We did just figure that out. But, like,
so
candy
good.
Yams have, like, mine have, like, a glaze on them, like, a nice...
The marshmallows on top.
I don't, because a lot of people don't like it, but I do like it. Like, I do sometimes make a sweet potato fluff, like you said, like mash the potatoes and like whip them a little bit, and then you bake them with some marshmallows on top.
Oh, that sounds so good.
I also learned how to make sweet potato pie this year.
Yes.
It was so good.
Well, so good. What was that for Thanksgiving?
I was making a lot of sweet potatoes, and I make them, you gotta make the little ones.
Like, so you can just eat it with your hand for breakfast.
Yeah.
Really?
Girl. I'm going to make you some.
Would you please? Yeah.
We
got to
make it vegan now.
Oh, but now we're making vegan. But
I mean,
you can make it vegan.
What's vegan about? Oh, the
eggs.
Butter.
Butter.
Cream. Yeah. And there's a lot of dairy.
That's so true. In everything.
Yeah.
We don't realize how much dairy is in everything.
Like when you eat bread, there's like, you know.
Croissants.
All butter.
Yeah. It's a trip. The stuff that they're stuffing into our systems so easily.
Today in White History, we talked to Assigned Sex Director Sean Dawson and Kyler O'Neill, aka Angel, about being trans under Trump. Kicking it off with pronouns and the dangers of misgendering, we talk over a lot of things gender, and I asked Angel about some of the obstacles she's faced since transition. Sean opens up to us just a little bit about assigned sex before we get to the meat of the conversation.
So my pronouns are she, her. And I am an MTF, by definition, MTF transgender woman, although I identify as female. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult transitioning, especially in the beginning. When it comes to things like presentation to the outside world and paperwork and name changing across all platforms, not just like, you know, on your driver's license and social security, but like on your PayPal account or on your United Travel account, and like everything and having to, you know, have that conversation, even your health insurance, having to have that awkward conversation a bajillion times. I'm at a place now where I'm comfortable in my skin and I feel like my exterior reflects outwardly as best as possible at the moment, how I feel internally, how I've always felt throughout my entire life. And, you know, some people may say, you know what, you're just crazy. You're still a boy. And that's fine. If that's what if that's your belief and that helps you sleep at night, that's how you make sense of it, baby, go on. Just don't disrespect me and don't call me by the wrong pronouns. Don't disrespect me as I respect you. Respect my space, respect my existence as a human being just as much as I respect yours.
Right.
So my pronouns would be she, her, they, them. But prior to doing this documentary, it was always just she and her. And I learned a lot. Like, this documentary was a learning experience for me, like, along the way. Like, I'd never, people were like, oh, are you trans because you're doing this doc? And I would be like, no. But I identify as being, like, genderqueer, which does fall under the trans umbrella. And it's the same as, like, now that I'm more comfortable, like, I think I present more as like just, I used to be like, oh, what, like I used to confuse sexual orientation and my gender identity. I'm like, oh, I'm a dyke. Like, I'm just a dyke. But
I'm still a dyke.
I'm a dyke. But it's not like I'm genderqueer. I don't come off like, when people see me, they're always going to say she, her. That's, I never get like anything. I present as that. So I don't bump into any of the hurdles that, that you bumped into. It's just like, oh, you're just a masculine dyke.
Experience kind of like coming into my like gender identity of being like a non-binary like woman or non-binary femme. It's like I wasn't really that aware of my gender until I was dating a trans person, and even when I met them, I wasn't like that much in the know about gender because it was, like I said, something I didn't really think about. I only thought about being a woman when I needed a man to do something for me. I was like, man, this box looks real heavy. It's a very convenient time to be a lady and like just be like, oh my God, can someone just please pick this up?
I need some air in my tires.
I just couldn't do it. Can someone please just change my flat, you know? But kind of, I think it's...
Way to capitalize off of the social construct.
I mean, it's the only way. But I think that it's very interesting, Sean, like when you say being around, when you... I don't know. For me, seeing someone who thought, had to fight to be validated, like have their gender validated, definitely made me completely look at my own gender in a different way. Even just like thinking about what people had said to me in the past, like, oh, like I was never the ladylike lady, but I'm super feminine though, you know? So I was like, oh, wow, that totally makes sense. And my friend was like, we're non-binary femmes. I was like, wow, you're right. Amazing. I never heard of that before, but that is right. Okay, so as we know, Black trans women are the most vulnerable among us. Of the 102 transgender murders between 2013 and 2017, 86% of the victims were Black, Hispanic, or Native American. 11% were white, and 5% were unknown. The American Journal of Public Health even said the homicide rates of young trans feminine Black and Latina residents were almost certainly higher than those of their cis feminine counterparts. And not to mention, like, most trans folks are misgendered if they're murdered. Like, so there's a lot of these murders that are not going track because their families are, like, not respecting the way they lived or not respecting their pronouns. So I just want to talk a little bit about misgendering and, like, first of all, why it's important to use people's pronouns, and then, like, the harms of misgendering.
Well, your pronouns are how you identify. And when someone misgenders you, they're basically totally dismissing how you identify. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, and people say, oh, you can't compare this to race, but it's really the same shit, different toilet paper.
Right.
It's like when someone says to a Cuban, oh, are you Mexican? They're like, no, I'm Cuban. Oh, well, you all look alike, or you're still mm-hmm. Spanish speaking. It's all the same. And it's not, you know, I've had to correct white guy friends of mine that I have who sometimes, just when it's like two of us talking, they'll say, oh, it's all the same. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a
right.
There's a big difference in cultures and identity and, you know, standpoints and so worldviews, totally different. And history, their histories mm-hmm. are very different. So when you misgender a person, it's dismissing who they identify as and how they identify, which can be painful. But, you know, on the flip side, sometimes it's difficult not to misgender someone because we are so mentally trained to just know at a yeah. glance, in a snap second right. moment, you know, what someone's mm-hmm. preferred pronouns are based off of their exterior,
right.
their presentation, or not necessarily their presentation, but how they genetically or biologically present.
Right.
So to the untrained mind or to someone who is narrow-minded, that can be very difficult, a very mm-hmm. not so easy thing to do. But it's interesting because I used to think I was really good at the whole pronoun usage. I'm like, oh, I got this down packed. You yeah. know, my trans sisters, for the ones who are, you know, visibly trans or the mm-hmm. stealth ones, whatever, like mm-hmm. I just use she pronouns all the time. It's easy for me.
But they came along.
Well, yeah. And then I'm new to the non-binary, the total non-binaries.
Right. Yeah.
And so when I see a person who I see as my sister,
yeah.
as a woman, as a trans woman, I have to be really, really cautious about my pronoun usage and just not to call them she mm-hmm. because they prefer to be called they.
Yeah.
And it's something that I really have to watch every time, especially when their presentation is very femme.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I have to be cautious of. So it's even difficult for me as well.
I think they is the hardest
one. I think they is the hardest one too, because like me, I constantly get like, it doesn't bother me if someone says she.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't, like I'm not bothered by mm-hmm. it, which is something, but I was on an interview and the interviewer called me a lady and I fell away. I was like, do I look like a lady to you? Like, I felt away, especially since they're like putting themselves out there as like, we're like diverse and like, we like all like, we're
only
very,
because it's trendy.
Exactly.
Right. We always have to remember that
trendy.
Only because it's trendy. We, a friend of mine who is she's a very big public figure. I don't want to misspeak. She's like a Beyonce, what do you call them?
Impersonator.
Yes. Jade, thank you. No, her name's Michelle.
I was like, is it my boo Jade Nova? I love you, girl.
Oh,
it's, we're going to put you in the hashtag so you can find them.
It's my boo, Michelle. And yes. She recently did an event for this club. It's you know, it's a gay club, and they were like, oh yeah, we want to get together because she and I are part of this this organization that's founded by Black trans women, led mm-hmm. by Black trans women. It's called the Unique Women's Coalition. Mm-hmm. It's been around since 97, okay. but they've just recruited ambassadors to help kind of push this organization into getting somewhere. And we're actually seeking funding, uniquewomenscoalition.org. Yeah. So my ambassador sister, she collaborated with this gay club, and you know, it seemed like it would be great PR for the coalition because we're a Black led trans coalition. We're seeking right. funding. Mm-hmm. You know, this is great exposure for us. Mm-hmm. And she lends them her name and her services. And in exchange, they barely, and this is LA culture. Right. Everything's all about show. They barely gave us any cred. They didn't mention, they mm-hmm. hardly mentioned UWC. There were articles that were published mm-hmm. about the collaboration that mainly glorified them and just faintly touched on the fact that they were collaborating with a trans-led organization. Wow. So it was all for show. It was basically trendy. Mm-hmm. They it was something that they had partaken in because it's trendy to be ally with trans or queer, you know, yeah. queer people. Yeah, yeah. even yeah. though it's a gay bar by trade, so yeah. they're already in touch with the queer community to an extent. But it's very trendy. Trans is very trendy.
I can't expect people like the people that I work around. Like those people to immediately be like, oh, they like mm-hmm. they're immediately
yeah, that's
gonna
something
do-
we're not taught. We're not right. taught that. We're not taught that in school.
Like, there's I so tell not, people now at not, jobs, but
I mean,
that's
from our
me.
Childhood.
I remember,
oh no, you have to learn that.
Yeah, it's not. This isn't something. That's
it's really like the coming out process for work, basically,
mm-hmm. right? Yes. But then they have to train like everyone at the workplace on absolutely. How to, and it's mm-hmm. like. So do you get like, would you get upset if someone didn't say they, like if they defaulted?
No. So I only started using they pronouns maybe like 2 years ago, 2 years ago. Yeah. And some of my friends still use she. I'm not like crazy hung up on it, but when I meet new people, everyone uses they pronouns that I meet. They are the ones that I prefer. But I don't expect, one, someone who doesn't know me to get my pronouns right. Like, that's never going to make me mad. But I do expect, like, the people closer to me right. to do their best
right.
to use the pronouns that I prefer. But also, like, I'm not crazy about, like, you can still be, like, girl or sis. Like, I'm not going to be mad if you call me sis. Or unless you're doing it on purpose, because you know bitches love to call you sis when they're trying to shade you. And it's like, don't fucking shade me, bitch.
But it's better than saying bitch.
Is it?
I love sis. Like when Cardi B was going at Nicki Minaj in her Instagram post, she was like, sis, you could have did this, sis, you could have did that. Instead of saying bitch, you da. It was just like, you know, sis.
That's
like,
real.
Sister, nah, like, bitch has a certain sting to it. I just love the way it sounds when I call someone a bitch.
Well, yeah, it feels good. It doesn't roll, but it feels really buh. Just yes. anything with a buh, like,
yeah, it
bitch.
Feels like I'm stabbing you, know, you like, a little.
Who you calling a bitch? You know, like,
exactly.
Like, she's
I
a
love
bitch.
That
you
know? Energy.
Like, it's like, oh, I'm that bitch. How many times I got to spit today? Know that I'm the bitch. Like, you know?
Yeah, I love that energy. Yeah. Yeah, but like, I don't get mad if people call me she. Like,
but would you
I
expect
understand.
Like your mom? Like, or someone like your family members, like fuck your immediate
no.
family, would you expect them to use your pronouns?
No. I don't.
With my family, I've been gone. I left Cincinnati in 2012 and I never looked back. Mm-hmm. Even though I go back to visit all the time. One of my uncles passed away a year ago, and then another uncle passed away this year. And that funeral was this huge family reunion. Mm. And I've been gone for so long, but they've all been following me via social media. That they all knew what pronouns to use. Most of them didn't even recognize me. So if right. they didn't recognize me, it was just like, well, who is she? And then yeah. when they found out, they came around to using the right pronouns.
That's dope.
But
yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard. It's easier too, like where they're seeing you in transition. If they like see she, it's hard yeah. to call somebody like a nigga. Be like,
to an extent, because some guys be trying to fill it. They'd be like, oh, well, you're still, and it's like,
listen,
ooh.
Let me, that shit makes me so mad.
You know, it's just like, well, you still are to me. And it's like,
well, I don't care who I am
you.
To you.
No.
I'm dead to you as far as we're
You know, it's so funny. But like literally just 2 days ago, my very first job in high school was working at McDonald's. And my old manager from McDonald's called me. He FaceTimed me on Saturday.
Wow. Because you still have the same phone number?
I've had the same number. I've had the very first phone number I ever had in my life, I still have to this same. Day. I mean, there's no need to change it. Drama comes and goes.
I just block people, honey. The block button is so real.
The block culture has saved my life. But even before that, I just got by, like, people calling my phone, harassing me. Like, I remember before I started transitioning, girls' boyfriends used to call my phone thinking that I was at their girlfriend. And then when I started transitioning, it switched. And now, like, females were calling my phone, like, yo, how you know so-and-so? He's mine. Blah, blah, like, drama. I've been through a lot of drama with my phone number. Mm-hmm. And I refuse to change it. There's no need.
I can't.
It all fades and passes in time.
I have an ex-boyfriend from high school, so I obviously don't even consider him a boyfriend. But every few years, he hits me up and I have to block him all over again. And he just hit me up recently. I was like, stop hitting me up. He was like, you blocked me? I'm like, yes, because I never want to talk to you again. Block.
Well, the gestures. It's sweet to be thought of.
That is not sweet. If I tell you I don't want to talk to you anymore and you persist, that's just disrespecting me. Yeah. Like, it's like, at what point?
Well, I guess that would be a reason to change the number. For me,
but I'm not changing my number. I'm blocking. I'm like, that's too much work. I'm like, isn't it too much?
You gotta adjust your whole life. Yeah, and I got a new number, y'all. And then you have to re-memorize. And I got enough going on.
I guess I'm different because I just be like, if I will change my number and then only talk to the people that I want to talk to. I think
Sean might be changing their number pretty soon.
Well, Sean, you're very popular. No. Not everyone is as popular as Sean.
I'll be like, I only need like 10 good numbers.
Sean is thinking about changing the number.
About changing it right when we got. I was like, you know what? This LA thing is something new. I think I'm going to change my phone number.
whatever floats your boat, Sean.
But I haven't done it yet. I've had this phone number for like 10 years.
Since I've known you.
Yeah, I've had this number for a minute.
Yeah, I've had mine for 12 or 13 years.
Yeah, I like it.
Actually, it's simple, I haven't had it.
Like, mine's from Duval County. I still have a 904 number from Florida, so I'm never changing that.
I'm never changing my 513 number. I lived in New York. They'd be like, why you ain't change? Why would I change my number? This phone fake. Number works fine.
Also, I'm not from there. Like,
exactly. And my phone number is easy to remember. It's very easy to remember. So
mine has a lot. Sean can't remember any phone numbers.
I do remember your phone number.
Oh, yeah. Sean learned my phone number so he could steal my CVS coupons.
I did.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
It's always good to do art with friends, and my friend Lance Lowe just got his own radio show on KCTY The City, Long Beach City College Radio, called People You May Know. I was on this week, and you can catch it every week Wednesdays at 3 p.m. PST on KCTY The City, and you can live stream that at kctyfm.org. After we had our fill of white foolishness and foolery, it was time to get to the main event. Our resident producer, audio engineer, and my personal boo, Sean, dug deep to let us in on the making of their documentary, Assigned Sex. The 30-minute short presents uncomfortable perspectives from both trans and cisgender people of color, with hopes of starting a necessary conversation to reduce stigma, eliminate bias, and increase inclusion. Sean explored gender and sexuality through the lens of Angel, a 23-year-old preacher's kid assigned male at birth. Religion and hypermasculinity continue to be a powerful influence on how genderqueer people are treated in the Black community. Sean and Kyler reflected on their journeys over the 5 years of making the film and shared their lessons and learnings since it ended.
Yeah, like just hearing like Black perspectives on transgenderism. Yeah. I wanted to bring that to light and just basically provide trans 101.
Yeah.
What it is to be trans.
Facts. I think we kind of already talked about this a little bit earlier, but you don't identify as trans, but can we talk a little bit more in depth about kind of your journey with your gender while making this film?
I mean, it was definitely a journey.
Yeah.
Initially, I came into it. I mean, I knew a lot of trans people, more so trans men. Mm. And most trans men, like, once they transition, they go into stealth mode. Like, they're just, like, it's nothing like the experience of, like, a trans woman. But I wanted to kind of, like, I always had questions, and it's something that they weren't really willing to talk about.
Right.
So I started doing, like, my own research, and I came across just, like, crazy stats. Just about like the suicide rate within the trans community. Mm-hmm. And then just the amount of people that identify as trans, like Black people that identify as trans. And it's something you don't hear about. It at the time when I first started doing the doc, it wasn't something that was all over TV like it is now. Like trans now is everywhere. But when I first started, it was not.
Nothing. Yeah. Angel, why did you want to, kind of join up and be a part of this? How did you find like the casting? Like, tell us the whole story about like how you got here.
So I was on a dating site.
Yeah.
A queer dating site. And Andrew, the executive producer.
He's a producer.
Okay. Andrew, the producer, reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you like to be in a documentary? This production company and I are working on this documentary about transgender people. Would you like to be a part of this project?" And I remember thinking, I literally just touched down in New York City when he had reached out to me. I'd been there for maybe under 6 months. And I was like, yeah, sure. Wow. Why not? I don't know what I could contribute, but if I can contribute something and, you know, share my story and maybe help a life or touch a life or inform someone, sure, I'd love to be a part of this project. So that's how I got on board. And it was funny. I used the name Angel, which is my stage name, just to kind of, for safety purposes, so I could still have... not necessarily anonymity because my face is on the camera, right, but just so I could still have my name, like my personal, my actual name. So Angel was and still is the stage name that I use when I am go-go dancing and also in this documentary.
Yes. Go-go dancing. I live for a good stage name, honey. Live for a good stage name. Okay, so...
And it's so funny how I got the stage name.
Yeah, tell us the story about that.
I have to tell you guys. So, my stage name is Angel Lexington. My stage name is Angel Lexington. I am I'm one of the featured dancers. I've been a featured dancer for this nightlife party for years. It started in New York. He brought it over here to LA. And I've been dancing with this promoter for a long time. And how I got the name Angel Lexington years ago... During my college years, I got an internship with Clear Channel Media, and we were on site for one of their radio stations events or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's this game, and there's so many different variations and rules of it, but it's called the Porn Star Name Game.
Yeah.
And it's where you take the name of your first pet for your first name, and your last name is the name of the street that you grew up on.
Yeah.
So my first pet... from what I can remember, because I can't remember our very first pet's name, but the first pet that I could remember, her name was Angel. And I grew up, the first street that I lived on, that I grew up on, was a street called Lexington.
Yeah.
And that's how I got, and when I said it, I was like, oh, mine would be Angel Lexington. And everyone was like, that actually sounds kind of hot.
And I was like, you know what?
I'm going to stick with that. So then I started, I moved to New York. I was broke as shit. I didn't have any money. And this guy had told me about these... He told me about these trans-oriented stripper parties. And so I went and checked it out. And one of the girls there was very, very receptive and embracive of me. And she's like, oh my gosh, you're so pretty. You're so pretty. You should dance. Are you dancing tonight? And I was just like, no, I'm just here. I was, for real, I was just there to mingle with boys. Right. In a setting where they were like, you know, they knew what was up with the tea. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, you need to dance. You would make so much money. And so then... the following week, I talked to the promoter of the party. He told me what his vision and expectations were. And then he said, well, what's your name? And the only name I could think of was Angel Lexington.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay, it's Angel Lexington.
Yes, Miss Angel.
That's been my stage name for a long time. And when I agreed to do the documentary, I wanted to use that name just to keep my privacy.
Yeah.
Somewhat, because when y'all gonna see me in the documentaries and y'all don't know. If y'all see me in the street, you're like, oh, Angel.
So now you're letting us use your real name, Kyler O'Neill.
Kyler O'Neill. Kyler's actually my middle name. So I have this thing about privacy, y'all. I got issues.
No, that's very real. I don't like people in my business. Yeah, my last name is not K, y'all.
Privacy is a big thing, especially in this day and age where we may not know it, but we are being deprived of our privacy each and every day through technology and all these
people
apps.
Are doxing these, people, putting out their personal addresses and information.
So on any social platform, you will never see my full name or my first name. You'll always see a nickname or my middle and last name, which I use, my nightlife stage name is Angel Lexington. So if y'all come to the strip club and y'all see me dance, her name is Angel.
Angel.
But I am an actress. I am a singer. I am a writer. And on across all of those, and I'm also a public figure, an ambassador for the Unique Women's Coalition. And on all of those other platforms, you will hear the name Kyler O'Neill.
I love that name. Okay.
Yeah, I like that name too.
All right, Sean, I'd love to hear a little bit about the casting process from your end, like how you ended up choosing the people that you chose, kind of what you were looking for going in.
So going into it, we did not really have a plan. We just knew that we wanted we knew that we wanted most of the cast to be Black. We were really going on like the whole Black people, like we wanted to tell a Black story. So that was one part of it. And we also wanted to have it was even in terms of like the male and female, like binary.
Right.
So we didn't want just a story about like a lot of trans women or just like trans men. We wanted to do like a little even split. Mm-hmm. We also wanted someone that was like non-binary.
Right.
We don't have that though within the doc. And we had a couple, we got most feedback. Like we posted on Craigslist.
Oh, cool.
We posted the ad on Craigslist. And Andrew, who was a producer, he went on a whole bunch of like dating sites. And he started just basically scoping out profiles and hitting people up.
Hey, Andrew, I hope you're listening. We're going to let you know we shouted you out.
I love you, Andrew. I miss you.
We didn't. Angel was the only person we found. Actually, I take that back. We found someone else through the dating route, but it was too much following her. And we found out in the very beginning. So we had to just the first, when we tried to do the initial interview, was like, this is going to be too much. Her life is crazy.
Wild.
So, we got like a lot of people responded to the ad, and we had them submit like a photo and just basically give us like a brief description of themselves. And they had to like post their social media profiles and we checked out the social media profiles, and we wanted, like, I knew that I didn't want like a lot of the same story.
Right.
So I knew that I wanted to have someone that was like really like family oriented. And then I wanted to have someone from the Black church.
Yeah.
That's where Angel came in, was from the church.
Hallelujah.
Praise him, praise him.
I should have brought my tambourine. I have one.
You should have. And we wanted to find someone. We actually wanted an athlete. We had an athlete. And then we wanted someone that was just
he is very fine. I'm sorry.
He is so fine.
Okay.
Every time I see him, I'm like,
if
oh
you
my
want
God.
It, I give you his number, girl.
I'm in love with him.
And
I got his number.
We just sat, like, literally just going through profiles. And he's like, they would be a good fit. They'd be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And then we called him.
Right.
And talked to him on the phone. And it was super easy. Like, the whole process probably took like 2 weeks.
That's not bad. How many people do you, what was like the big, so you, how many applicants do you think you got or people who are interested?
We probably had like maybe like 50 people reach out.
That's good.
Because it's also like you're just putting yourself out there.
Yeah, of course.
There were a lot of like women, like trans women, but not any like trans men. Like we had to really the ones that we have, where we only had like a few submissions from like the trans man. And it's a stealth thing that I was saying. Like,
I think that's very interesting. Yeah.
Even now, I'm just like, shit, should I have done this? Should I do that? Should I be putting my face on all of these things? You know, because then, you know, you're risking you're sacrificing your social life and to an extent, because it's like, shit, if you're not discreet, if you're not stealth, you know, you're less likely to meet someone who's okay with, as far as like being an MTF trans woman, it's a bit more difficult to meet a guy who's going to be okay with a woman who is openly trans versus a woman who's stealth or who's super, super discreet or who's not out. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. Cause at the end of the day, we all just want a regular, normal life. And then it's like, what is a normal life? A normal life is what cisgender people have. The luxury of being able to meet and connect with whomever, whenever, leave the house, go to the grocery store looking like whatever they want, and still live in peace and get home safely without having to worry about any social ridicule or crucifixions, for lack of a better word. Oh. Figuratively speaking.
What drew you to Angel most specifically, since we have her here today?
So Angel stuck out to me because when I first met Angel, she was conservative church girl from Cincinnati. Wow. I'm talking about like cardigans, covered up, like fresh out of college, like just so like, and I wouldn't say timid, but just very, very like a conservative church girl.
Yeah, wow.
And that really, like, everyone else that had reached out, they were like
how
strippers.
How did dibbles have tanned?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
That's why Angel started, like, immediately. I was like, I like her. Like,
Yeah, so speaking of which, being a conservative church girl, the mention of religion is like pretty heavy throughout the documentary. I mean, I grew up in the church. I think we all grew up in the church here.
Praise God.
obviously, it's mentioned a lot. Why did you think that that was important to show?
Just because I think the Black church is like a big pillar still in the Black community. It's the foundation of so much. And even while I was doing this documentary, and I like the documentary includes like perspectives from a lot of cisgender people of color.
Yeah.
Everybody would always take it to the church, even if they never read the Bible,
which
they would
most
take it to
them.
The church.
They have not read the Bible.
And I thought that was super duper interesting. And like, I have a really close relationship with my mom too. And I remember when I first started doing the doc, like she was completely ignorant about it, but my mom is like nice.
Yeah, very,
very nice. So her thing was like, but in the Bible it says this. Yeah. And I was like, that's all this stuff I'm telling you, and you're gonna take it like, what else does
the Bible
say?
Doesn't say anything about trans people. I just want to point that out.
I wouldn't know because I've never read the Bible.
Thank you for being honest.
It was either my dad or my mom who are both ministers. One of them told me that it says in the Bible that there is no gender in heaven.
I mean, God is genderless himself, or so themselves.
That, yeah.
So they say that all the time. That's what I always don't understand about Christians. I'm like, but God is non-binary or gender fluid or gender non-conforming, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
In today's terms.
Yeah. I saw this meme a while back and it still sticks with me to this day. It said, don't judge someone because they sin differently than you. So whether you see this as a sin or not, you are not perfect. You ain't out here. You're not Jesus Christ. You ain't even John the Baptist. So don't, he who is without sin or she who is without sin, cast the first stone.
I just want to point out, Jesus was very chill. Jesus was the chillest. Like, if Jesus was around today, he would be hanging out with all trans, Black, queer people.
God is love. God is love. And it was so funny. I remember I was watching this. I have these old VHS tapes that we got. It doesn't matter. I have these old VHS tapes that have recordings of Touched by an Angel. Mm-hmm. And in every episode, I love that song. I love that show.
Every bird.
R.I.P. Della Reese.
R.I.P. Oh, I adore Della Reese.
Is it bad that I have no idea what y'all talking about?
Oh, I'll send you some links.
You never watched Touched by an Angel? Where was your grandmother?
One thing I noticed in every episode of that show, whenever those people would come to those angels, how messed up they would be, and they would always hit them with this line, God loves you.
Mm-hmm. Always.
Regardless of the mess that you are, the mess that you're bringing to the table.
Unless it was Andrew was taking you with him. Okay. He was the angel of death.
He was. It was very sad when you saw Andrew because it was just like, damn, shit.
They're not going to make it, huh, Andrew?
It's just a matter of when they're going to die. But it was a great show. And I think people are searching for meaning and understanding we're always trying to make sense of things. That's what we do as people. But we get so lost in the literal sense of things. We forget the core message. The core message is God is love. Spread love. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It is not your job to judge. It is not your job to cast stones at someone else's sins because you are holier than thou. Right. That's not what it is. And if we want to talk about transitioning, going against God's perfect will, then let's talk about birth control. Let's talk about condoms. Let's talk about pulling out. Because those are all three forms of going against God's natural design, because sex is designed to what? Reproduce. Not just for you to get your convenient nut. Ooh. So if you want to go there, and then if you want to take it a step, I'm not even going to go to the medical.
Perfect. I want to... So tell me about your journey with like Christianity. Because I know for me, even before I knew I was gay, like once I was old enough to not go to church anymore, I stopped going. Once I was like out on my own, which was like I graduated from high school and that was it, I stopped going to church. I tried to go back a few times, but it just like, I don't know, it just feels very like God will change you if you keep coming here. And I just was like tired of that shit because it's like you said, like people sin differently, quote unquote. So have you like what part has religion played for you in your journey as a trans woman? Like kind of have you reconciled that relationship? Like have you found like what works for you? Like, yeah,
absolutely. When I first saw, I'm a preacher's kid, so I was always in church. And there was quite a bit of resistance from my parents in the earlier stages when I decided to transition. But, you know, I left. So there was none there. They couldn't do nothing about it because I didn't live under their roof anymore. I moved miles and miles and miles away from them. So that gave me the freedom to live and do as I please. And they could just figure it out, you know, while I was still figuring myself out. But during that time frame, for 3 years, maybe three, four years, I didn't go to church. I didn't look to Jesus. There was even a time where I didn't believe. I was like, that's not real. Mm-hmm. This is just BS. You know, I went through an atheist phase. And then I just started coming into my own spirituality and noticing things here and there and seeing the parallels and connections between my reality and what was written in the book and, you know, knowledge that had been dropped on me from other religious people that I've crossed paths with. And slowly but surely, I found my way back into the church. And Sean invited me to this wonderful church up in Harlem.
They invited me too. That place will get you, right?
Abyssinian Baptist Church up in Harlem. It's a great church. And I went there and I was like, I love this place.
It's the music.
The music, the message, everything. Just
we
the spiritual,
still watch
the aura.
It on TV from time to time.
The we'll spirit is real. Then. And so that got me back into church. And then when I came here, I was attending One Church LA, which is... T.J.'s daughter and her husband. That's their son. That's their church. And it's cool. I loved it. When I went there,
I feel like all these people are so conservative. I know T.D. Jakes is conservative as hell.
But let me tell you the beautiful thing about One L.A. One L.A. is, it's a black church.
I love black church.
The beautiful thing about One L.A., it's everyone in the industry, which it's a broad spectrum. A lot of gays. A lot of straight, a lot of bi, and some trans.
Right.
And it's just, it's like all are welcome. It has a very all are welcome vibe. You know, Jesus said, come as you are.
Yeah.
You know, don't, whatever. I'm not even going to get into it. But Jesus said, come as you are. And it's very, very free. You can go in there wearing sweats. Some people like to dress up like they just left from the club or they just spent the night at someone's house and decided to go to church and not go home and change. It's a very...
Don't have that kind of
It's
time
a very
sometimes.
Chill church. And I love that church. And then I stopped going for a minute. I slid back into my heathenism.
So you didn't want to go to church?
Well, just because I don't like waking up early on Sunday. But you know what?
That's very real.
But one church, they have three services. They have an 8 a.m., an 11 a.m., and a 1 p.m., which is great. No. But then I
used to go to like an 8 p.m. service. That shit was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was so lit in church at 8 p.m.
That's what I used to do. Like Abyssinia has one on Wednesday nights at like 7. It's exactly 1 hour.
Yeah, those shits are lit. Yeah. The late services are very lit. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I've been going to a church up in Los Feliz. I think it's... I just started going there, so I hope they don't kill me for butchering their name. I think it's MCC. It's a really good church. I adore it because it's everyone's in there. You have black, white, lesbian, gay, trans. We're all in there. We're all in there worshiping, and it's so fun, and it's so intimate and personal, and I adore it.
Is it FMCC?
No, I think it's just MCC. Hmm. It's, let me look it up real quick.
No, yeah. I love, for me, black music.
Maybe we should go to black church while we're in LA.
Yeah.
You guys should go to one LA. You would like
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I'm like, I know you they're
really
going to have the jams.
A lot of industry people there.
And they're going to have the jams. They're going to be singing the songs that I want to hear.
That's refreshing. My favorite part about black church.
It's refreshing to be around people who are, and I keep on saying industry people, because I like to stress the fact that, you know, these are people who are in the creative field,
right,
who have open minds, who aren't, you know, closed-minded, like, you know, from some of the churches that we grew up in.
Right.
You know, these are industry people who have the vision, who have that mindset that's not so narrow.
Right.
You know, wonderful people. Some wonderful people go to that church.
The last question I want to ask you guys is, what do you think you learned after making this film? It's been a super long journey. I know when I met Sean, they weren't even really, they were just kind of going back to work on it again. I don't know how long you had taken a break. But what do you think you learned from the experience of making the film and for you, Angel, being a part of it?
What did I learn from this experience? I didn't learn, I wouldn't say I learned anything during the making of it because I was just being very present. But being where I am now and who I am now, who I've come to be, and watching those old clips that used to be on the promo clips that were on the YouTube channel that mysteriously disappeared, but we won't dwell on that topic. looking back and watching that, or watching the content of the old me, and seeing how I've blossomed in some ways and how I've kind of turned cold in other ways. It's been very interesting to watch that transition, the transition of self. Yes, the transition of, you know, the exterior, you know, there. But the transition of self and who I've become and how I've become. And I won't be lying if I said, I don't miss some aspects of who I was when we first started filming this documentary as opposed to who
I am. The cardigans, that's probably the hardest part, right?
Definitely the cardigans and the church girl mentality.
Yeah. I learned, what did I learn from? I learned one, that a lot of the ignorance around this topic is just driven by fear.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that this documentary just like gives people some insight and like black families are comfortable having like the conversation, and it's not something that's always like, it drives me nuts where it's like all these black, like it's here, like right in your face, but you completely ignore it or condemn it, but that doesn't make it go away. It's still there. And I made some friends with this, and it taught me a lot about myself, like about my own gender identity, my own gender expression, and just being more comfortable in my own skin. One of the things like with there's this clip of Jalen and he's talking about like how being like an advocate and how draining it is and how sometimes you have to take a step back. And that, like, that's real, because while I was doing this doc, like it took a while because this shit is depressing.
Yeah.
Like, it's not.
Shit is real.
Shit is real. Yeah.
Shit is
real. And it's very depressing. Like, there was a point, like, for like a year, I was in therapy. Like, I had to just take a step back and I was just questioning, like, a lot of things. So, like, I get, like, why advocates, like, how they step out every now and then, because you got to, like, take care of you.
Yeah.
Take care of self. Self-care is very important.
It is.
And you were right. The church I was talking about earlier is Founders.
It is FMCC. Yeah, Founders, that's the one.
Metropolitan Community Church. You're right. Yeah. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, is it a lot of white people there?
No, it's very mixed. A lot of us, actually.
What about the music?
It's like half and half. I jam when I'm there. But okay, so
I went to Hillsong, so I could probably rock. Like,
but it's not like Hillsong.
Well, good.
I love Hillsong.
Oh, me too, girl.
They be jamming. I love the lyrics on point. I get down.
The lyrics are on point. Yeah, I used to go there in New York,
and they got some cute singers. No shade.
Yes, they do.
But they're all married. Womp womp.
They are, but, because you know they got to get to the fucking. Got to be married. They all went to Bible college,
of course.
Can't date for 1 year when you go there.
I know. Don't put me in a room with them. but yeah, Founders Metropolitan Community Church, they sing everything. They sing Hillsong stuff. They sing some Kirk Franklin.
Yeah.
They sing some Mass, Mississippi Mass Community Choir. They sing, girl, yes, they sing, they sung How Excellent 2 weeks ago.
I literally have a meme that was like nobody, and then it was like tenors, and this meme of a shark, and it was like it all the year.
They be jamming at that church, Founders Metropolitan Community Church in Los Feliz. It's a great place, and I'm name dropping because I think it's very important as a Black person and as a Black trans person. It's very important to identify the spaces
that are name drop,
where I feel comfortable going. Because it's very important as a woman, as a woman of color, as a trans woman of color. It's very important, and it's very difficult to find a space where you feel welcome and safe and at ease.
Yeah.
You know, because we have to be on guard all the time, if not for one reason, for the other or for the other.
So last question. Angel, you got to watch the intro of the doc. It's changed a lot. What are your thoughts just seeing before? We're going to watch it a little later, but before seeing the whole thing, what do you think? Do you think this film is going to accomplish, you know, what Sean hoped and what kind of you also probably hoped for the documentary?
I hope so. The intro of this documentary was very powerful, and it actually kind of took me back, and it actually kind of saddened me, because I was just like, because, you know, I'm very thankful to God. I'm at a point in my life where I am, I'm at a place where I'm good, and I can live a stealth lifestyle. So I don't encounter the same garbage that I used to encounter when I was early in my transition. Most of the time. So watching that took me back to those moments, and it was just like, wow, this hurts and this sucks, you know?
But it's real.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be, the story has to be told, and it has to be put out there, because this is real shit. I mean, you know, there needs to be more exposure about stuff like this, as opposed to some celebrities' flaws and how they did people dirty and stuff like that. It's like, okay, that is a problem, but that's that one celebrity that has millions of dollars. Right. Let's talk about these issues in our communities.
Where can we find you both?
I have a website, www.kylerooneal.com, last name O-N-E-A-L. And on there, you will see my acting reel. You will see links to my social media accounts. You will see some music, and you will sooner than later find a link to a book of poetry that I am self-publishing soon. So yeah, KylerOneal.com is where you can keep up with me. And again, it has a link to all of my social media outlets.
Awesome. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn at I Am S. Dawson. I also have a website, iamsdawson.com.
All right, y'all, that's it. Thank you for hanging out with us this week. We will be back soon. Remember, Black Friends Dinner is in LA, and we want to talk to you. If you're in LA and you want to come get some home cooked dinner and share some black ass laughs with us, please go over to blackfriendsdinner.com and shoot us a message. We're here until about the end of May, so we would love to talk to you. Peace.